Hi, I'm Nikki Halliwell, and this is SEO in 2024.
Nikki, what's your number one SEO tip for 2024?
My tip for SEO in 2024 is about creating a meaningful SEO audit. Anyone can create a website, and there are even automated tools, which I wouldn't recommend, that can even audit these websites for you. But the final difference, or the biggest difference, is in the outcome of that audit. What I mean by that is it's all well and good having a list of issues for a website, and that's usually what you get on the back of these automated tools, or even on the back of some tools created by some professionals. But when you have that list of issues, the website owner, the client, the stakeholders, everybody involved needs to know what they actually need to do about that list of issues. So something that I've been working on for quite a number of years, but been refining this process, especially in this year, is making sure that I'm working with relevant people at all levels of the business, of the website that I'm working with, to truly develop a methodology that ensures that everybody involved can get what they need from it. And this is something that any SEO professional can do, and there's no set way either that it needs to look. But essentially, instead of having a list of issues where you're just saying canonicals are missing or X amount of canonicals are missing, ensure that you're including all of the information that you needed to fix it. So I tend to lay my audits out on a spreadsheet, and I don't go into a huge amount of detail in this section, but what I do include for each one is what the issue is, why it matters, how to fix it, what type of issue it is, where it can be found, or the specific URLs, if it's just one or two, or, you know, if there's a series of them, then include all of them. How to replicate the issue as well. I talk about how it can be fixed, who's responsible for it, and also ensuring that who's responsible for the fix and who's responsible for ensuring that it's done correctly. And there's an important distinction between them as well, because they can also be different people or different departments. And then the last few elements that I do include is like how much of a priority it is, any repercussions or the potential value, and the deadline and when it needs to be done by. So basically, you're just going through the what, who, when, why, and how of each one. And these are all just laid out in separate columns on my spreadsheet, and, you know, including various amounts of detail for each one. And this may seem really straightforward, but you'll be surprised actually by how many audits I come across that don't include any of this information. Like I say, they'll just say X amount of canonicals are missing, or whatever the issue is. So like I say, I lay this out on a spreadsheet. It's on a separate tab from the main audit that I work through. But this also means that everything is in one place and it's easily accessible to everyone who needs it whenever they need it. And then if more clarification on each of these issues is needed, well, we could do that, of course, when we come to actually working on each issue. And I use a custom developer briefing document, which is a Word document that I've also developed. And that's where you can include much more of the details about each issue. You know, you can include like the technical specs as well. You know, is it happening on Chrome? Is it happening on, I don't know, what else is Safari, Firefox? Because, you know, depending on the issue, it can be different for each one. But you can also include links to any additional resources and things like that.
It tells you something, doesn't it? You're struggling to remember the name of other browsers. So
I know.
That shows you how much domination Chrome has at the moment. But slightly off topic there. In terms of meaningful audits, are you saying that the only thing that an SEO has to do is actually add actions or interpretations that are relevant for various stakeholders in the organization? So it's not about changing what they audit. It's just about interpreting what they already audit.
Yeah, basically, because most SEOs that I work with, at least, do have some sort of checklist that they use for their audit. But what I'm talking about is actually taking that and presenting it to the client in a way that they can actually use. It doesn't matter if you have a checklist of like 20 issues or 200 issues that you work through. It's actually what the client can take from that on the back of it.
And your clients may have different stakeholders as well. They may have dev teams, they may have creative content producers and perhaps senior leaders that need to take different things. So in your tabs that you have as part of the audit that you provide, would you have different conclusions or action points or summaries depending on the stakeholder that happens to be reading it?
Yeah, exactly. So I break it down at a very top level, that sounds strange to say. But I'll say, like, you know, if it's technical on page or off page. And then based on that, you know, we can see who the stakeholders are. And yeah, that absolutely dictates the level of detail that you need. But that's why also I find it's so much more straightforward and like translatable, if you like, or transferable would be a better word, to have it in this format, because then you can just have the top level detail for each person. But then if you do have like a junior member of staff or like a manager who absolutely does need the more detail, then you can include that in another tab, or you can include it in the like the briefing document that I mentioned earlier. And it's just it's a living document, the way that I set it out. So, you know, we have access to it now, but then you also have access to it months down the line where we keep working on it. And yeah, as you say, like department heads, C-suite individuals and people like that, they're only likely to be interested in like the big picture. And then, you know, like people who are working in content and actually looking at it, yeah, they need different levels of information as well, as opposed to people like ourselves that might be working in the more tech space.
And in order to interpret the data that you initially put off in your audits, can you automate the analysis of this data in order to actually create the summary that you're trying to create for the various stakeholders? Or is that a relatively human-driven task still?
For me, it's still a human-driven task, and I want to keep it that way, because then you're going into the realm of like the automated tools, and they're fine, but they don't include any of the context that you need. You know, they don't understand everything else that might be happening around the business. And that's everything that us as humans, we talk about and we pick up in the initial discussions that we're having. So we're able to take things into consideration, like the size of the dev queue, how frequent the sprints are, when there's a code freeze, and what actual resources the client has at the time. And these are all things that feed into the sheet. I call it my RAG matrix, so red, amber, green. So all of this information that I talked about is included on there, but then obviously there's also prioritization that I use, red being the most crucial issues and green being the ones that, you know, can be more long-term and we can come to them further down the line if we need to. But, you know, this is all refined based on, you know, all these human elements that we can take into considerations, you know, the automated tools are not going to do when you're doing these summaries.
And talking about the size of the dev queue, one of the key tasks that an SEO has to be aware of, certainly within a large organization or working with a big client, is actually being able to actually encourage the clients or the dev team to implement the recommendations. So how do you get dev teams on board to implement your recommended fixes more quickly?
It's all about speaking their language. And this is what I've been doing like a lot of time with this year. So again, it's this dev briefing document that I've mentioned a few times already. And it's also about making sure that you've got a seat at the table with these developers and you're speaking directly to the people that are responsible for implementing the fixes that you're recommending. Going back to the canonical example, a lot of people just be like, oh yeah, fix the canonicals. But they're like, okay, how would you want me to fix them? Am I doing the same blanket fix across the site? What is it that you need me to do? So when I'm creating these documents and having these conversations with the developers or whatever their titles are, it doesn't matter what their titles are. The important thing is that they're the people that are responsible for doing these fix. And I make sure that I'm talking about the scope of the issue. Is it one canonical or is it 1,000 canonicals? And what do they need to do about them? Again, steps to reproduce them, any technical specifications. So we can go into a little bit more detail here. Like I mentioned Chrome and Safari earlier, but also sometimes there can be certain issues that are affecting only certain operating systems or only on certain mobile devices. It can even be different between mobile and desktop. But then also talking about the success metrics and KPIs, any considerations and blockers. Success criteria is also a really interesting one. So that's basically how will they know as developers that the issue has actually been fixed? What do they need to look for them to have a degree of confidence that it's fixed? And then they can pass it back to us to actually validate that. You can also include things like approvals and any sign-off that they need to get. But yeah, this is not the document where you're saying, this is what a canonical is, this is why they are used, These are actually, as I say, speaking the language of the developers. They're designed to cut out the back and forth and ensure that they have the information that they need so they can just crack on and do what they do best. And just make sure that you're having the conversations with these people. Ask them what they need to know. I mean, those are some examples of what I include in mine based on the conversations that I've had. But it could be different for the people that you're working with. So just actually find out, you know, what do they need to know to be able to do their job? Again, you know, like I said earlier, it may seem like a simple step, but it is so often overlooked. And doing that creates such a huge amount of frustration and back and forth for everyone involved. Whereas, yeah, just having these conversations just eliminates all of that. You can even take this a little bit further once you've had this and ask to be included in the handover or review calls. So when the work has been done and the developers are confident that it's been done and they're getting ready to push it live to production, often in the various teams that I've worked with, they will have like a showcase call or, you know, got a similar sort of title where they're saying, this is what we've done in this sprint. This is how it works. We're going to push it live. And then with you being on that call, as well as having access to the staging site where you've tested it, you can then actually say, yes, it is fixed, or no, because when you click that button or when you navigate to this page, I can see that that's not behaving in the right way. And again, that's just another way that you can check on the progress of these things and make sure that you're having the right conversations with the right people before any work begins, crucially, but also as well before anything is pushed live to the production site.
And how often do the various stakeholders want to hear from you with an updated audit? Because I would imagine that if a dev team's focusing on something, perhaps they might want a little bit more of a frequent update from yourself, but maybe a senior leader might just want a monthly update or something like that.
In terms of a refreshed audit, you mean, or the items that we're working on?
In terms of a refreshed audit, and yes, absolutely, yeah, a refreshed audit.
Yeah, I really didn't want to say it depends because it's 2024 and I didn't want to stick to these same cliches, but it does depend. Depends on the size of the website that you're working on. Usually when I have all these items on the issue log, I plan it out month by month. Again, living document, as I keep saying, so that the priority and the focus items each month do change depending on where we're up to and what the priorities are for that month. That roadmap usually lasts about a year, give or take. But if there's any, you know, big algorithm changes that affect that, then yeah, we'll do a refresh then and there if we need to, or if there's a migration, we'll speed things up and do it that way. But there's also, I have like regular calls, scheduled calls that are running on my client sites, and they're always looking for anything that's changed or been impacted in any way. And then I always keep the audit updated in that way, in terms of, you know, I'm not still talking about the two canonicals that were an issue in January, whereas, you know, it's now much later in the year, for example, because of the scheduled calls that I have, I can see that actually it's no longer two canonicals, it's now 22 canonicals or whatever the case may be. So we've always got the latest information when we're talking about each item.
Brilliant. Okay, so by living document, then you're probably talking about a live Google Sheet that is updated all the time.
Yeah, exactly that. And, you know, it's exactly that. It's a Google document. I find that they're a lot easier to share with people at all levels. Some businesses, depending on their industry, don't always like Google documents. They prefer like Excel, but it's easily transferable, or at least you can use it on calls for sharing with them in that way. But in 99% of the cases, Google Documents and Google Sheets do work for most people. You share the link once and everybody has access to it, especially if they bookmark it. It makes it a lot easier. But it's also really handy for collaboration. And, you know, they can change the status of any items if they need to as well, especially if it's something that you're waiting for them to implement, such as, I don't know, like a page title change or anything like content-based. If they're working on it, they can update the status themselves rather than you having to keep chasing for them. So it really does become a living document that everybody refers back to.
If an SEO is struggling for time, what should they stop doing right now so they can spend more time doing what you suggest in 2024?
It comes back to what I said at the start. So just stop relying on these automated tools. And what I mean by automated tools is the ones that audit your site for you. And they're just like, there you go, that's what you need to work on. And that's because they tend to say that certain items are an issue when they're not. For example, I've seen a few tools that say duplicate H1s are the number one biggest issue on your website, but it's not, because you can see that there are big rendering issues or that the href lang is broken, and you know that that's something that's going to have a greater impact. So you do use these tools. I'm not saying avoid them altogether, but I'm saying don't rely on them when it comes to your audit summaries or your prioritization and things like that. That's always going to take up too much of your time to actually go through them and see actually what is the biggest priority. You're much better to get hands-on and keep that human element in that aspect of the audits that you're working on. And that's also because these tools can miss things. Like I saw one the other day where there was a chatbot that popped up on mobile devices, and that actually inhibited the user's ability to click on the checkout button. So that was something that we could fix nice and quickly and easily. But if we'd have just been relying on these tools to audit the sites for us, we'd have never have picked that issue up, because that's like a user experience issue. That's a conversion issue as well. So it's that human element that we needed to actually be able to spot that and see actually which mobile devices it was on, because it was only on those with the very larger screen. So like the newest iPhones, for example, because of the way it displayed, it really was getting in the way of that complete checkout button.
Nikki Halliwell was Tech SEO Lead at Journey Further. You can find her over at journeyfurther.com. Nikki, thanks so much for being part of SEO in 2024.
Thank you very much.
I've been your host, David Bain. Get your copy of SEO in 2024, the book, over at SEOin2024.com.